soon as I left the Auberge de Jeanne Cottard, I went to bed and slept the clock round all but 1 hour. Then I washed my teeth for the first time in a fortnight, bathed and had my hair cut, and got my clothes out of pawn. I had 2 glorious days of loafing. I even went in my best suit to the Auberge, leant against the bar, and spent 5 francs on a bottle of English beer. It is a curious sensation being a customer where you've been a slave. Boris was sorry that I had left the restaurant just at the moment when we were lancé, and there was a chance of making money. I have heard from him since, and he tells me that he is making 100 francs a day, and has set up a girl who is très sérieuse and never smells of garlic. I spent a day wandering about our quarter, saying goodbye to everyone. It was on this day that Charlie told me about the death of old Roucole, the miser, who had once lived in the quarter. Very likely Charlie was lying as usual, but it was a good story. Roucole died, aged 74, a year or two before I went to Paris, but the people in the quarter still talked of him while I was there. He never equalled Daniel Dancer or anyone of that kind, but he was an interesting character. He went to Les Halles every morning to pick up damaged vegetables, and ate cat's meat, and wore newspaper instead of underclothes, and used the wainscoting of his room for firewood, and made himself a pair of trousers out of a sack. All this with 500,000 francs invested. I should like very much to have known him. Like many misers, Roucole came to a bad end through putting his money into a wildcat scheme. One day a Jew appeared in the quarter, an alert, businesslike young chap who had a first-rate plan for smuggling cocaine into England. It is easy enough, of course, to buy cocaine in Paris, and the smuggling would be quite simple in itself, only there is always some spy who betrays the plan to the customs or the police. It is said that this is often done by the very people who sell the cocaine, because the smuggling trade is in the hands of a large combine who do not want competition. The Jew, however, swore that there was no danger. He knew a way of getting cocaine direct from Vienna, not through the usual channels, and there would be no blackmail to pay. He'd got into touch with Roucole through a young Pole, a student at the Sorbonne, who was going to put 4,000 francs into the scheme if Roucole would put 6,000. For this, they could buy 10 pounds of cocaine, which would be worth a small fortune in England. The Pole and the Jew had a tremendous struggle to get the money from between old Roucole's claws. 6,000 francs was not much. He had more than that sewn into the mattress in his room, but it was agony for him to part with a sou. The Pole and the Jew were at him for weeks on end, explaining, bullying, coaxing, arguing, going down on their knees and imploring him to produce the money. The old man was half frantic between greed and fear. His bowels yearned at the thought of getting perhaps 50,000 francs profit, and yet he could not bring himself to risk the money. He used to sit in a corner with his head in his hands, groaning and sometimes yelling out in agony, and often he would kneel down, he was very pious, and pray for strength, but still he couldn't do it. But at last, more from exhaustion than anything else, he gave in quite suddenly. He slit open the mattress where his money was concealed, and handed over 6,000 francs to the Jew. The Jew delivered the cocaine the same day, and promptly vanished. And meanwhile, as was not surprising after the fuss Roucole had made, the affair had been noised all over the quarter. The very next morning the hotel was raided and searched by the police. Roucole and the Pole were in agonies. The police were downstairs working their way up and searching every room in turn, and there was the great packet of cocaine on the table with no place to hide it and no chance of escaping down the stairs. The Pole was for throwing the stuff out of the window, but Roucole would not hear of it. Charlie told me that he had been present at the scene. He said that when they tried to take the packet from Roucole, he clasped it to his breast and struggled like a madman, although he was 74 years old. He was wild with fright, but he would go to prison rather than throw his money away. At last, when the police were searching only one floor below, somebody had an idea. A man on Roucole's floor had 12 tins of face powder, which he was selling on commission. It was suggested that the cocaine could be put into the tins and passed off as face powder. The powder was hastily thrown out of the window and the cocaine substituted, and the tins were put openly on Rukol's table as though there were nothing to conceal. A few minutes later, the police came to search Rukol's room. They tapped the walls and looked up the chimney and turned out the drawers and examined the floorboards, and then, just as they were about to give it up, having found nothing, the inspector noticed the tins on the table. "Tiens," he said. "Have a look at those tins. I hadn't noticed them. What's in them, eh?" "Face powder," said the Pole, as calmly as he could manage. But at the same instant Rukol let out a loud groaning noise from alarm, and the police became suspicious immediately. They opened one of the tins and tipped out the contents, and after smelling it, the inspector said that he believed it was cocaine. Rukol and the Pole began swearing on the names of the saints that it was only face powder, but it was no use. The more they protested, the more suspicious the police became. The two men were arrested and led off to the police station, followed by half the quarter. At the station, Rukol and the Pole were interrogated by the commissaire, while a tin of the cocaine was sent away to be analysed. Charlie said that the scene Rukol made was beyond description. He wept, prayed, made contradictory statements, and denounced the Pole all at once, so loud that he could be heard half a street away. The policeman almost burst with laughing at him. After an hour, a policeman came back with a tin of cocaine and a note from the analyst. He was laughing. "This is not cocaine, monsieur," he said.
"What? Not cocaine?" said the commissaire.
"Mais alors, what is it then?"
"It is face powder."
Rukol and the Pole were released at once, entirely exonerated, but very angry. The Jew had double-crossed them. Afterwards, when the excitement was over, it turned out that he had played the same trick on two other people in the quarter. The Pole was glad enough to escape, even though he had lost his 4,000 francs, but poor old Rukol was utterly broken down. He took to his bed at once, and all that day and half the night they could hear him thrashing about, mumbling, and sometimes yelling out at the top of his voice,
6,000 francs! Nom de Jesus Christ! 6,000 francs!
3 days later, he had some kind of stroke, and in a fortnight he was dead, of a broken heart, Charlie said.